This is Digital Dave again.
And I'm still Fast Eddie.
And joining us, we have Major Mark Lefebvre.
Right.
We were coached on that.
From the Royal Canadian Air Force.
That's correct.
Well, welcome to
their
America.
Version,
thank you.
Their version of NORAD.
Yes.
Which they probably call it LENORAD.
Acronyms are usually opposites in French. So doorknob or whatever.
I was thinking le radar, you know.
Nice. I have a question, which is why you're here.
Yeah.
Handy about that, huh?
Yeah.
What about guys that just blow the border?
Yeah, the same applies. I mean, if you're not authorized to go in an airspace, NORAD's going to probably step in and do what they need to do and intercept if required.
And gently coach you.
Exactly. Gently signal you to move away and go in the direction they want you to go.
Go,
you
know, somewhere else.
This has become a popular topic lately, avoiding intercepts. We've had people from our country doing it now. Canada is stepping into this. Are we seeing a great increase in people busting these things?
No, it's nothing new. Like, so NORAD was established in 1958. So our main mandate is to protect the Canadian and American airspace. So we've been doing this for 65, 66 years now. The what you may see as an uptick or think as an uptick is just, now it's more in the media. It's easier to see. But on average, it's 3 to 4 times a week that we have to either prepare to intercept or go intercept people that go through airspace they're not supposed to go to.
Wow. I just thought NORAD tracked Santa.
I was.
Oh, yeah. We do that. That's,
that's an easy one.
Yeah, that's the fun job.
Yeah.
Has he ever been intercepted?
Every year. Every year he's being intercepted.
You know, they tell him to check the NOTAMs and the TFR, yeah, and he just doesn't do it.
Yeah, he just doesn't listen. I don't know why.
Oh. 3 to 5, 4 times a week. That's a lot of airplane time, a lot of flying, a lot of pilots getting excited.
Yeah, but it's costly. It's costly to taxpayers.
Yeah.
And this is why we're here. We're trying to educate people to try to avoid TFRs or temporary flight restrictions, because the goal is to minimize expenditure of resources. It's almost $100,000 every time we go up.
Holy
wow.
So, and that's taxpayers' money. So you want to try to avoid wasting money for things that are easily avoidable.
You hear that, pilot? Stop wasting my money.
Yeah, really. Knock that off. Jeez, do a little preparation.
Where we live, whenever President Biden goes home for the weekend, the airspace over my house is closed.
Yeah, so, and that's a big one. And, and it's funny you say that. This year is an election year, so you're going to see TFRs pop up all over the place.
It's a mess.
Yeah, so pilots have to be careful and then plan appropriately.
Plan? There's that word again.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many pilots plan? Apparently not enough.
No. Last week, there was two at the that violated the TFR.
In Milwaukee,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, where are you based out of?
Colorado Springs right now.
Oh, so this is a vacation.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
Have you been here before?
Second year.
Wow. Amazing, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic. This is just such an incredible venue. And we love it.
You've met a lot of wonderful people, and now you've met us. Good luck.
Yeah, I can't top it. Like, this is it.
Yes.
Talking to you guys is the...
When you talk to pilots, how many of them are surprised to hear about these procedures and things like that? I've never heard of you guys, never heard of these intercepts.
More than you would like to. There's a lot of people that are not quite sure what we do. And then a lot of people don't seem to fully understand intercept procedures or how easy it is to just go online to the government websites and figure out where those TFRs are. So it's, and that's why we're here, just education.
There's so much information available to the pilots. It boggles my mind. You got to check in so many places.
Yeah.
So, we're getting better.
We're trying anyway. We're just hoping that we can educate the people that are blowing it so that next time, you know, it's a one-shot deal.
If it was me, from the pilot's perspective, I would be flying along and I go, oh, look, there's an F-16.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's lost.
It's your own personal air show. It's a one-time only.
Yeah, but it comes with questions at the end.
Yeah, and you know what the sad part is? It could lead to you losing your license, fines, jail time, or ultimately, and this is the worst-case scenario, deadly force could be authorized.
Well, I would hope that there's a lot of things I would have to demonstrate before you guys would resort to that.
Yeah, luckily it has never happened.
Right.
We're hoping to keep that perfect track record.
Yeah, me too.
But losing the ticket, I mean, that's a permanent thing?
It depends. I've heard 6 months.
Okay.
I've heard, like, longer.
I have the perfect solution.
Just don't fly through TFRs.
Well, that's the first solution, but if you're going to be dumb enough not to check everything, send them the bill for the intercept.
Oh, there you go.
That'll change their tune.
Change the attitude.
I understand that when they get their ticket back, it has an endorsement on it that says stupid.
Pay to the order of.
But, you know, the misconception is you can't, like, there's an inner ring, the 10-mile ring of a TFR. That you can't fly through that. That's to protect the
assets. That's the no-fly zone, right.
But the 30-mile outer ring, you can transit through it. You can depart from or land into that outer ring. You just got to talk to somebody. Squawk a discrete code and plan appropriately. If you're on a VFR, flight following, for example, a flight plan, IFR flight plan, you can go through them. So it's not like a barrier to transit or flying. You just have to do your homework.
Right. Well, the first question I would ask is, how do you find out who to talk to?
What, like once you're in the TFR?
Well, once you know the TFR is there and you're planning your flight and you'd like to transition through it.
Yeah, if you talk to ATC, it's as simple as that.
Okay.
So if you're IFR, it's going to be easy. You're already on a discrete transponder code. But if you're flight following, they'll let you know. And you'll have your own transponder code, so they'll track you. It's all about knowing your intentions.
Right.
If we don't know what your intentions are, you're not talking to anybody, you're squawking 1200, then we don't really have a choice but to scramble aircrafts and then go see what you're really up to. But if you're talking to center, for example, they'll accommodate.
Okay. As long as I don't state my intentions, I'm going to crash on the candidate.
No.
That one probably wouldn't get you permission.
Oh, you won't make it. You won't even make it.
Definitely.
There.
Won't even get off the ground, right?
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. The one commonality is communication.
Absolutely.
Once you declare your intentions and you're communicating with the proper people in the proper manner, life is good.
Yeah.
Well, provided your intentions match up with their goals.
Well, if I'm flying, my destination is to, you know, A, have fun, and to get to where I want to go.
Right.
Safely.
Safely.
So, we have a job. We have to protect assets and people on the ground. So, you know, TFRs usually are for presidential travel, a sporting event like the Super Bowl, the UN General Assembly. So all those, like, high visibility events, we have to, like, you know, do diligence and protect the assets and people.
You know, it's kind of a bummer that we're not under the 10-mile ring, because then we might get a free air show once in a while.
Really?
And not have to answer questions.
Well, now, you just stated something there. I've always thought that the TFRs were basically just for large sporting events and the president. But
no,
yet you've said that they pop up all over the place.
Yeah, they can be used to. So there's a difference. Like, so NORAD gets involved in TFRs that involve presidential travel, high visibility events. Like I said, we're talking like Super Bowl, the UN General Assembly. But you can have TFRs for, like, if there's a wildfire. So there's going to be a temporary flight restriction area to protect the firefighting aircrafts and whatnot. So. Yeah, they're used for all sorts of reasons. We just get involved in the higher visibility one.
Well, I'm curious.
I imagine you get a lot of requests from news gathering agencies that want to fly their helicopters in and look at stuff.
Yeah, but then, you know, it goes through public affairs, and if we can make it work, we can make it work. If not, it's like...
Sorry, guys, not today.
Yep. Well, especially with a major fire, because, you know, there's aircraft all over those things trying to contain it. And the last thing you need is some silly organization flying their news chopper through a congested area.
Yeah, and getting in the way of those people who are actually doing the work.
And the problem being is you're dealing with all the smoke, so your visibility can be impaired too.
Yeah, and we all know that reduces your reaction time, so you got to be careful. And
it could be ugly.
How many pilots do you guys have? I mean, NORAD is a separate entity from the Air Force, is it not?
Well, it's not. It's a different command, but it uses assets from both the United States Air Force and the Royal Canadian Air Force. So we use bases all over the country where we have standby assets, like fighters that are ready to scramble within minutes to go and do the job.
So those are strictly assigned to NORAD, those fighters?
Yep.
So
to NORAD mission. Yep.
Right.
Because we don't own anything.
Okay.
But we just... We task people to do certain missions.
Well, then you have to train those pilots special.
Correct.
Because your missions are obviously different than everybody else's.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then you station them around the country and say, wait for the call.
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of airplanes are you flying?
So in Canada, it's the CF-18, and shortly we should be getting the F-35. And down in the U.S., you've got...
Okay, you guys are getting serious now if you're bringing in the
35s. Yeah, and it's going to help because now we're going to be integrating with you guys. Like, it will be seamless. But you are, like, the U.S. Air Force is using the F-15, the F-35, the F-22 in Alaska, F-16s. So, and then some helicopters as well. Like, if you go in the Washington, D.C. area, the Coast Guard is helping with some intercepts as well.
You get Black Hawks. Well, you know that.
Black Hawks as well, yeah.
Do you guys look at the flight characteristic of the targets before you decide what aircraft to intercept with?
Yeah, it's part of the assessment.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a Piper Cub putting along at 60 mile an hour, it's going to be tough to intercept with an F-16.
Well, they work in pair. So, yes, it's a bit more challenging, but it's doable. They have, like, I don't know if you saw the demonstration.
I did. They're using a twin. That's pretty quick.
Yeah, but it's still not that fast compared to a fighter. But, yeah, so they work in tandem, and then there's always somebody in the back doing weaves to stay behind and keep an eye
weapons
on him.
Range.
Yep. Exactly. Okay, so if it's a Cub, it's just a really big weave.
Yeah, exactly.
Like three states to the left, two states to the right.
They'll make it work. That's your job.
We've been talking to Major Mark Lefebvre here from the Royal Canadian Air Force. He's attached to NORAD, and we've been trying to avoid a fighter intercept.
There are people here that think we need to be intercepted, but...
yeah, by several fighters.
But like I said earlier, we would be like, oh, look at that. I wonder if he's lost.
What a neat airplane. Cool paint job. Yeah. I'm Fast Eddie.
I'm Digital Dave, and
this is EAA Radio.